Hello, everyone. Welcome to Yachting International Radio. You're with Corinne from the Crew Coach on the Wellbeing Project. Today, I have a very special guest with me, and we've had a lovely chat before starting this recording. So I'm very excited to get started and for Nancy to share her wisdom with us all. Now, Nancy has been elected as a candidate as a Secretary General for the IMO. Congratulations, Nancy, and so lovely to have you here.
Thank you so much, Corinne. I appreciate this opportunity to speak to your audience. Thank you.
Wonderful. So before we begin, as yachties, we are very much aware of the maritime institutions that are there to protect us, but often we feel confused in terms of how they protect us. So do you mind telling us a little bit about the IMO and how they serve seafarers?
Thank you very much. Now, IMO, or the International Maritime Organization, has been in place for now 75 years, beginning as a UN specialized, or rather created as a United Nations specialized agency to look after issues of shipping in terms of safety, security, and ensuring that operation of ships does not negatively impact on the marine environment. Basically, that's it. Now, the human element is very, very important, because the way IMO works is coming up with bringing the member states together. And today we've got 175 of us, member states, who come together and look at issues jointly, then come up with a standard way in terms of a convention agreed by all membership on the particular issues that I have talked about, safety, security, and preservation of the marine environment. Today, we've got no less than 55 conventions that have been agreed within the framework of IMO. But we talk of conventions, but then we also have codes and other agreements that then build into those conventions on the way they are implemented. Now, agreeing on conventions is one thing. They have to then go back home with the member states, and then they are domesticated. They are, the state, in terms of its legal framework, comes up with the methods, the legislation, the procedures on how to implement that convention, of course, aligned with the mother convention. Now, in terms of safety, it became very clear very early on that no matter how much technological measures you put, no matter how much operational measures you put, the human being is very, very critical in terms of ensuring that the convention works and that the measures that are put in place work towards the intended objectives, which means, therefore, the seafarers play a big role in ensuring the proper implementation and also attainment of the objectives of the convention. So that became, therefore, a subject of regulation, because it was found that how they are trained, how they are issued with certificates, how they are measured in terms of operations and how they work is critical to attaining the objectives. And therefore, this is the area that's under the purview of IMO. The main convention, which is the International Conventions on Standards of Training, Certification and Watchkeeping for Seafarers, came initially as a convention to set standards. But then a few years on, the maritime community discovered, wait a minute, how it is implemented may differ from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. So therefore, IMO needed to play a bigger role in terms of seeing that it's implemented. So in 1995, came up new amendments that saw the STCW becoming the first convention where IMO then took the initiative to become the supervising body on how it is implemented, and a process of audits, a process of whitelisting. For example, now if a country has not been audited and found to be giving full and effective effect to the convention, then it misses what is called whitelisting. Whitelisting in the sense that IMO maintains a list of the countries which are compliant. And as an employer, as a ship owner, if I want to crew my ship, the first point of reference is to go on that list and see, oh, is Kenya on the white list? Meaning, therefore, their seafarers are compliant. So that's the first prong. Then IMO went ahead and the other UN agency that deals with issues of employment is the ILO, International Labour Organization. And I am was tasked to work with the ILO in order to ensure that issues of welfare, like hours of work, pay, are also, because pay of the seafarers, those are also issues that affect the workplace. So IMO has a duty to work with ILO to come up with a framework that deals with that issues to ensure that all round the seafarers issues are addressed so that they can concentrate on working. Then, of course, we have industry organizations that work together to ensure that this space delivers in the best way possible for seafarers. And therefore, the International Transport Workers Federation, also the ITF, works with the members, the industry, governments, to ensure that issues of seafarers in terms of their welfare, their mental well-being, and the way they are treated also builds towards attaining the safety of the ship.
Okay, so when did that change happen when they were focusing on psychological safety of seafarers? How did that change occur?
Now, the change, the industry is always evolving. Mm-hmm. And some of the issues that were not dealt with before keep finding space for negotiation, for discussion, and for consensus building. And issues of psychological welfare are beginning to come out very clearly as some of those that impact on the well-being, on the safety of the seafarers, and therefore also the safety of the ship. And therefore, they've become increasingly a topic of discussion. And, you know, there is ongoing now discussion on the IMO on how to amend the curriculum, the training processes to include increasingly such issues in order to bring more safety and confidence in the workplace and for the workers themselves.
Okay. So if a vessel that is found to be jeopardizing someone's psychological safety, let's say there's bullying on board, mm-hmm. how does the IMO intervene? Like, what would be the next steps in terms of protecting crew?
You know, in terms of the ship itself, the way the legal frameworks are organized, because of registration and ownership and proprietary interest on board ships and how they operate, the flag state is very, very important, because the country that allows the ship to fly its flag, then that ship becomes, as it were, an extension of the territory of that country. So the laws of that country applies on board that ship.
Okay.
Which means, therefore, it will be the obligation of the flag state to take cognizance and do whatever it takes in terms of its laws to ensure the safety and guarantee the safety of the seafarers. But that's not all. Now, ships don't necessarily go home in terms of the places where they are registered. And therefore, there is this network of people aligned to make sure that whatever the ship is supposed to do is observed, and the universal issues must be dealt with. So comes the regime of port state control, because ship will always visit the port for cargo, loading, offloading, and within that port, there will be the maritime administration of the country of the country whose port the ship is visiting. There will also be who is called the ITF inspectors. And therefore, all these work together between the flag state, the port state, and the ITF and other welfare association mission to seafarers also. They'll work together to ensure that the seafarers then are not unduly prejudiced or harassed. So there is that network of good-willing people who set up to protect the seafarers.
Okay. Nancy, to be very honest with you, what I'm experiencing or what I'm observing is that crew are falling through the gaps because there's so many parties involved that they get lost through the system. So a few months ago, there was a suicide on board, and I heard the mother read out the suicide, part of his suicide letter to me. He was, I think, maybe in his mid-40s. And one of the reasons, it wasn't the only reasons, but one of the reasons was due to being bullied on a previous vessel 6 months ago. Flag State came on board to investigate the death and to confirm the body, the identity. Then it must have gone to Port State Authority. The mother received no communication and waited for the body for a very long time to return to the UK.
Mm-hmm.
No one from the industry besides the captain where the son worked contacted her, but she had no other communication. And I'm trying to understand why are crew falling through the gaps? How can we improve the communication? Crew telling me they don't want to contact Flag State or DPA because they believe two things. The first is that they don't matter and nothing will change. The second is confidentiality and the risk of losing a job or finding employment very difficult in the future.
Sorry. Well, that's a very, very sad situation. I can't begin to imagine what that crew may have been going through.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one thing we realize is that the seafarers, as opposed to their counterparts on land, they work in a captive environment. You can imagine being with the same people every day, 24 hours. And as opposed to the people on land, you and I, in the evening, we go to our families.
Yeah.
And we are able to let off steam. We are able to discuss in an environment that is safe and, you know, where we are not being judged. And for that, we need to do so, so much extra. And that is what the IMO and the ILO has been trying to do. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it seems that as human beings, we've dropped the E into it from the word humane. It's like we no longer want to go that extra mile, and that's very unfortunate. But like I say, the industry is always evolving. Sadly, we learn from experience, and sometimes the experiences have long-standing and, you know, unfortunate consequences, because now we realize that we have to deal with these cases of the gaps. We need to reassure more, and this hasn't been made better than, you know, it's been made worse by the pandemic, you know, COVID and other, you know, militarization issues. And therefore, it's a wake-up call that whatever we've been doing may not be enough. We must do more as a maritime community. We must give confidence, because a young person hearing that story, you know, that, well, hearing about that incident, what confidence are we giving them that they can still come into the industry and find a meaningful long life career? So our work is not yet done. And I like that now the industry has come alive and is aware of the need to amend and to include these issues in training so that the seafarers are better able to stand their ground, even in this captive environment, and work in the confidence that we have their back. As both the regulators, the governments, and also the ship owners, and also the employers, it's critical that we have to keep retraining, retooling, and also giving them that confidence that we care. Collaborate more, talk more, public awareness also, or rather, making them aware that they have a place to go, they have someone to talk to, having call lines. It's not the same as it was before, surely, for communication with digitalization and internet and technology. They are not as alone as they used to be, but giving them the confidence that we won't shut the door in their face when they come and complain.
Absolutely.
It's very, 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 very important. So our work is not yet done, and it's sad that we've lost a life. And Otis is not young, so you begin to wonder what kind of oppressive environment they were working in, for them to feel that was the only option. Mm-hmm. And my heart goes out to them. Now, the conventions are not a cure-all because circumstances and environments keep evolving. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I would do is look at them critically and working with the member states. Of course, like now the flag state or the ship where the person passed on, the family where they were, working with them to get insights, new insights into where there are gaps, where we are not serving the industry as well as we intended, and where need may be amending those conventions and also including better infrastructure in which to serve the seafarers, but also most important, ensuring that the implementation also of the conventions and the amendments we may come up with is done in a way that ensures that the intended objectives is achieved.
I have to wrap up this interview, Nancy, and I think we need to do a part two because I've got so many questions for you, especially around your career progression, your history. I know you're a mentor and I'd love to hear what advice you can give to seafarers as well. So we'll definitely do a part two. But before we go, I just wanted to say, I've been trying to find the missing links, but I don't know if my voice is strong enough that I've got that backing to ask questions. So I've got so far being on the PYA Wellbeing Committee as a volunteer, where we've spoken to DPA and flag states. But I want to use this unfortunate incident as a case study for us to look at where did we go wrong. And I'm wondering, okay, I've heard back from flag state. Is my next step to go speak to the port authorities? And do I have a right to be able to ask questions?
I believe you do. I believe you do because we learn from our mistakes, unfortunate as it may be. And I think it's an approach and it's a principle that the IMO has embraced, that we don't always do investigations with a view to punish. It's always with a view to learn more and to see where the changes are required. Where are the gaps? If you look at the history of safety, we've learned so much from the major accidents. And therefore, this is one of the issues where that could also apply. And I don't think that you can, you know, you should think that you have very little impact or whether you are powerless. I think we learn from each and everything that we question. So your voice is also important. Let us know. So that then we begin to, you know, the journey into making it better. But it's very unfortunate. I can't believe what someone may have been going through in their 40s to feel that, you know, exit is the only option. How did we fail them? How did we stop being human? You know, that we can let such a gap begin and grow until somebody slips in and no life. You know, nobody should have to go through that. And that's why we must all put our hands together to save the next one and to build resilience in the people who come in and encourage the young generation that there's still enough of us who care. Mm-hmm. And also as a maritime community, we care enough to protect them and to encourage them to still come and serve the sector. Because otherwise, who will work for us? Who will help?
Yeah.
The industry. Yeah. Yet we need this.
Yeah, very true. Nancy, thank you for your honesty and your courage and your genuineness that is shining through the screen. I can really see that who we are, or who I'm talking to today, is who is, how do I describe this? But I just feel like you are so transparent and genuine. You are you. You're not pretending to be someone else. So thank you so much for that. I wish you all the very best for July. And I truly hope that you will be the next female African Secretary General for the IMO.
Thank you so much for your goodwill. We do our best and we hope for the best. Thank you so much. I look forward to having this conversation continue.
Again. Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much.